Session number 12709, Mr. Albert Davis, reel 12.
Mr. Albert Davis, reel 12. You were describing the incident with the German troops at Wadi Akrit, Mr. Davis.
Yes, when I ran down the valley, there was two Scots lads lying there on the stretchers, wounded, apparently taken prisoner. And this one Scots lad said to me, he said, "Sergeant," he says, "how long have you been taken prisoner?" I said, "I'm not prisoner." I said, "These are my prisoners." And with that, some Italians came out of bunkers there. And I looked in this bunker, right set up it was, right homely bunker, beds laid in and everything. And all these Italians came out. And the first Italian said to me, he said, "Here, Sergeant," he says, in English, "you can have these candles and also this camera." He says, "It's no good to me now." He says, "We're prisoners." I said, "Yeah." And, of course, all the time I was looking around for hoping to get some support. Not as I was frightened of them, but I at least wanted to know what was inside and around me. Anyway, I saw the sentry, the rifle on his shoulder up on the hillside. And I gave him a whistle and beckoned him to come down. He came running down. I said to him, I said, "Look, these two Scots lads on the stretchers are wounded. Now, I'm going back to HQ. I want you to guard these or take them, guard them, until I get back or somebody else comes and takes over. And I'm going back to HQ. I want these Scots lads looking after properly." And of course I went back. I left him in charge. I went back, reported to HQ that there was two Scots lads in the valley, wounded. And the officer said, I think it's Hawkins, and, "All right, we'll look after it." And they got on to the ambulance. And I said, "Also send an escort for the prisoners," which they did. What happened after that, I don't know. I know they were all right anyway. But I only regret I never asked him the Scots lads' names. I don't know who they were from that day to this.
So Wadi Akrit was a pretty quiet affair for you?
Yes, we were more or less in reserve. But once we broke, the other battalions went through, where we just followed on again onto the Tunisia plains until we got to Enfidaville. And then we thought, right, we're all discussing it, right, once we get this next battle over, get into Tunis, we'll be able to get some swag. That was our first thought, you know. We'll get to Tunis, get some swag, and have a blooming good rest after. But we're wrong. Because Montgomery came and said, "Look, 50th Division, we're taking you out of the line. I want the 56th London Division to get blooded before this battle's over." He says, "So we're taking you out of the line and sending you back down the desert for rest and training." And everybody was a bit disgruntled about that. You know, going all the way up there and the killing, very end, taken off. But nevertheless, that's what we had to do.
As you've been following the Germans up the desert, Had they been attempting to slow you up? Were you having to deal with booby traps, anything of that nature?
There was booby traps, yes, but not very many, especially up the desert, because they hadn't got time to lay them. If it was slow retreat, yes, you can expect booby traps. But the pace was so fast, and our tanks were so close to them all the time, that they hadn't got time to lay booby traps.
Were you warned against booby traps? Were you warned about what to look out for?
Yes, yeah.
What kind of thing would they do, or might they do?
Well, leave a vehicle and wire a telemine to it. No, you'd start messing about, open the door, and bang, we're told to keep away from them. Sometimes you could see the mines on them. You could see that it was a hasty job. There's only one in Sicily that I did see. But that was in Sicily. And that was painted black and yellow, brilliant, just newly painted. It was a water bowser. And it would look very attractive. And of course, when you go to turn the tap on to get the water out, there's a wire attached to it, and on the side of there, tried to cover it, but apparently, with a piece of cloth, apparently, a little breeze must have blown it, and you could see the round shape of the telemine. So, just had to wire it off and put out of bounds, danger.
You set off back down the desert. How did you travel?
By truck. And that was well over 1,000 miles by truck. Went first to Sidi Bish, a place called Sidi Bish, just outside Alexandria. That's our rest, clean up, and again, replace the arms that we'd lost. Yeah, we had motorcycles. Harley, funny enough, Harley Davidsons they were. The big American type. And I rode one of them from Sidi Bish right to the Bitter Lakes, where we were sent for training. And it was there where Churchill visited our mum. I'm afraid he didn't get too good a reception. From the officers, yes, but not from the men. They were very disgruntled about what had happened up the desert.
How did they show there?
Well, you could see it was when he'd come for him to finish at the end, they said, well, three cheers for Mr. Churchill. And the officer shouted, hip hip, hooray, and the other, boo. Half of them booing, you see. So you'd still get some of the lads support him, yes, all right. But the biggest majority booed him. But that was never put in the papers.
What form did your training take?
Well, again, sailing in smaller boats and landing up the Gulf of Aquaba. We landed at a place up the Gulf of Aquaba, training for landings. Well, by this time we knew it was going to be an invasion of some place. Yeah, we were training, you know, for landings on up the Gulf of Aquaba. We knew then that our next, we didn't know where it was, but we knew it was going to be an invasion of some sort. Eventually we were told, after we boarded ship at Alexandra on around the 5th Around my birthday again, I know it. Around the 5th of July, something like that.
It's been 1943.
Yes, on board the Winchester Castle. And, of course, convoy assembled and set sail. And then they said, well, it is invasion of Sicily. And they showed us all aerial photographs of the beaches where we were supposed to land, what it looked like, and they were very good. You know, it gave you a good insight of what to expect. but in the first place, instead of dropping us 7 miles off the coast, it was more like 10 or 12 miles off the coast, further than what it should have been. And what's more, the wind got up and made it very rough. We had all that May West on. As I clicked me pack, I split my way west and busted. So I was without one. I couldn't get another. Anyway, we scrambled down the nets off Winchester Castle onto the small infantry landing craft. Got in the boats and set sail for the beach. It was a bit rocky, and where he dropped us, you sort of jumped off the boat and right in big holes at times. Little Geordie Whittaker that was with me, he went right up to his chin. Lad one side me got all of his one hand and I got all of his other, and more or less dragged him through to shallower water until we could get a footing. Anyway, we landed all right, and funny enough, we never got fired on once by machine gun, and that was a godsend. Which, odd shell, yes, but he wasn't too bad a landing. Once we got up the beach, we had a pause, a sort of shake and dry off a bit, and then assembled and started moving forward. We come to the first long building, and I said to Geordie, you go around to the left, I'll go around to the right, I'll meet you the other side. And because we hadn't got the guns then, they came on later.
Did you act in an infantry role until your guns came over?
Oh yeah, yeah. See, the guns came on later. So I said, right, I'll meet you the other side. And all of a sudden, when I was halfway around, I heard bang, bang. Well, so I dashed to where he come from. And I found Geordie and the American, an American paratroop that had drifted away off his course. He landed there. Geordie, who'd got a flying pigeon scarf on, he did look a bit Italian. And also the American looked Italian, so they both thought each other was an Italian. Geordie shot the American through the arm, and the American shot Geordie through the throat, but fortunately it was only an outer wound through the throat. It didn't do much damage. And of course, they both had to, I had to leave them there, and right, wait for the first aid. And get off with the other part of the company until we captured the town of Avola. Now, I remember them sticking the flag up on Avola station, the British flag. And I remember one Italian running down the street, screaming his head off. And he had a good right to be, because as he was running, he got his hands over his private parts, and I imagine a shell splinter must have hit him in the worst possible place. You know, it's bad enough when you get kicked in then. But he was screaming his head off. I couldn't stop him, sort of talk to him. He was just running and running and running. Anyway, we got past Avola, past the town of Avola, made a defensive line. And there we waited until the guns were started to pour in then.
Fighting in Sicily was going to be different from the desert, wasn't it?
Oh yes.
What was the terrain like in Sicily?
In more cover, you know, you got more cover to take. But at the same time, it was closer in fighting. But what few prisoners we took in the first place, it wasn't very well guarded. They said once they saw the amount of ships, because they were looking right out to sea, the amount of ships, they just panicked, a lot of them, the Italian troops panicked and went. Left. Occasionally you get an Italian who could speak good English. Well, a lot of Italians speak pretty good English.
How did they receive you? I mean, were they pleased to see the English, the British?
Yes, the civil population were, yeah. Most of them were pleased. You know, they bring you fruit and have a cup of tea if you wanted, but we'd never got time. You'd like to, we'd start to, until an officer saw what was happening. Come on, you know, get going. And you just got to snatch whatever you could, when you could. Or they'd bring a bottle of wine. Pass a bottle around, have a sip, and pass a bottle around as you're going along. Because this time we were marching then, until we got near Lentino, where we got our guns back.
When you got your guns back, in what way did this new kind of fighting, this new terrain, affect the way you used your guns? Did you have to change your method of using your guns?
Well, yes. It was easier to find positions to put the guns. You know, these short built-up walls, olive groves, little orchards, and it's quite easy to find a camouflage place to put your gun. But we were advancing so fast, you know, you kept going. Occasionally you'd stop where armoured cars had come down the road. They didn't know that they'd been taken. And we were on the alert. Two or three times it's happened, but it never happened that they came close enough for us to fire. Somebody else had the benefit of that. And I can't remember firing a shell until we got to Primosole Bridge. Out of our gun. We were just there in case, ready all the time. In case we were wanted. And more or less, we acted as foot infantry, the biggest part of it, because it was more useful than the gun. Very narrow streets, very narrow roads, and built up high walls. Well, you never knew who was behind them. You sort of got to explore it. Sometimes you come across some Italians or Germans. They're just sitting there waiting. They'd had enough, you know.
And you came upon no basically severe action until Primosole Bridge?
Not really, no. It went... it was only in spasms, little spasms, you know, where you had to shoot up one or two things, and then it's virtually forward again, then another little spasm, forward again, little hold-ups like that.
What was the terrain like around Primosole Bridge to set the battle?
Well, you got the river. From the bridge itself, there was running a long straight road to Catania, with an avenue of trees down the left-hand side of it. On the right, it was pretty open but marshy ground. On the left was the plains of Catania, which the airfield was not far away. But close to the river were all orchards and a sunken track with a fairly good hedge all the way along it. Now, that was good for their defence. And the rest opened out to plains again, on the plains of Catania.
And where had the Germans positioned themselves?
Oh, right on this, right alongside this sunken track. Distance would be 100 yards, I should imagine, and no, round about 100, 150 yards away from the river side. So you've got to wade across the river, or most of them waded across the river. The first time I went across the river, I went across on a motorbike on the bridge. Took a chance on there, it was faster. And at night time we took a gun over and planted a gun right by the bridge, ready for firing from the Catania direction. That's the only field of fire we could see. Because although the ground was open on the right, it was marshy, and we knew the tanks couldn't come across there. But it covered the main thing, the Catania Road and the entrance to the sunken track. But there was a hell of a lot of machine guns there. Every time you went over the bridge, the bullets hit the bridge, flying all roads. You just used speed, like making a sprint, if you like.
And were you fired at when you went over on your motorbike?
Yes, but they were a little bit behind. By the time I was across the other side, before I could hear the bullets hitting the bridge after, they were behind before I could get across the other side. And as soon as I got across the other side, I turned right sharply down a little steep bank to the gun, which was right there. There was a farmhouse, and we got protection, of course, from shells from the farmhouse and the bridge balks as well, at the bottom of the bridge, you know, where the concrete balks are. That was pretty good protection from shells. But it was mainly the machine guns that was bothering us.
You'd gone over to this gun. What were you after?
Well, I was solely there in case German tanks came down the Catania Road to, because they wanted to blow that bridge up. In case they came down the road to retake the bridge. So my gun was solely there to protect the bridge. But it never happened that they did come down with tanks, or anything else for that matter.
So you didn't get the opportunity to fire?
No.
What other memories have you got of the Prima Soli action?
Of course, there was two or three times that the battalion had attacked, waded across the river and attacked these machine guns. But it was so close, and they were so dug in so well, that they let you get on top of them a few yards away, then open up. And each time, we lost so many men, that it was just madness to try and take them that way. So there were about three or four attacks put in, and each time we had to withdraw back across this side of the river. Until we got an assurance that our tanks were coming up and going to go forward. Now, two tanks did go across the bridge once, but they got fired on and they withdrew straight away. They got fired on quite a way up from the Catania Road, so they must have been overlooking that bridge quite well. Anyway, there's the carriers. I know there's four carriers and four guns and a column going out to attack that. Lieutenant Redway was supposed to lead it, but he asked me, he said, "Look, Sergeant Davies, you've got more experience. You know what we have to do." He says, "Will you lead the troop in?" And I said, "Yeah." But at that time, Captain Kirby came along and he asked me what I was doing in the lead carrier. And I told him that Lieutenant Redway asked me to lead. He said, "Like hell he has." He said, "Where is he?" I said, "In the third carrier back." So he fetched him out of it. He says, "You're the officer." He says, "You've had the instructions." He says, "You jump in that carrier and you lead the men." And I had to get in the third carrier back.
What was the plan of your action?
The plan was, it was stressed and stressed and stressed and stressed. You go over the bridge, less than 100 yards over the bridge is a left-hand turn, the only turn off the main road, and down a sunken track. You turn left down this sunken track and fire at everything and anything along it. But as soon as the carriers were on the bridge, the Spandos had so many machine guns opened up fire that even the driver kept his head down. They all kept their heads down. Instead of retaliating, firing back, they all kept their heads down and went straight past the turning where they should have turned left. Straight up in the road at the Catania, about half a mile up the road, where they were met by other guns and ambushed. Lieutenant Redway was taken prisoner. The Sergeant Rains and Sergeant Redhead was killed. Another lad was killed, I can't remember his name. And Glover, I think he was wounded and taken prisoner. Owen Sergeant Singlewood was taken prisoner. Anyway, it turned out that the second carrier did turn down the left track. And we fired, as we were going, fired as many shots as we could, and then withdrew back to the road and back to the right, because by that time our tanks were coming over. Well, the tanks came over and they went down the sunken track because they were protected from grenades being thrown in. Ours was open top carriers. And they just about sorted them out. Well, after that, what weren't killed, what few weren't killed, surrendered. And that was the end of the Primus Old Bridge.
Had the losses at Primus Old Bridge been very heavy, Mr. Davies?
Yes, very heavy. I don't know what the percentage was, but I know we lost quite a lot of men there. Personal friends of mine, lots of our sergeants, Sergeant Major Pallas. Well, I could name quite a few, but it's too many to name, really. I know later on there was a memorial set up there in honour of the 50 Div. It was only a pile of stones, but nevertheless it was a memorial to the actions that took place there.
Who were you fighting?
The biggest part were German paratroops and Nazis, the SS, and if anybody got my backup, it was SS, because they were all bent crooked as far as I was concerned. I would never like to take an SS prisoner. If I knew he was SS, I'd rather shoot him and get into trouble than than taking prisoner.
But they fought pretty desperately.
Yes, they did. Well, let's say desperately and crookedly. They'd do anything. Because they were in that position they had to do. To back, to prove to the others it was could be done.